Are you ready?
It's Afternoons with OMF.
Rivers passes. Caught for the touchdown by Williams. Phillip Rivers puts two fingers up as if they are going to go for the win.
I was going sideline. I was gone. Coach Land said, let's go win it right now.
Mike Vrabel did this earlier in the year against the Chargers.
I mean, I love Mike Vrabel.
End zone wide open. What a night for Mike Williams. And the Chargers have their first lead of the night.
Yeah. Let's go win it right now.
Right now.
It's not my anus. It's just a chocolate mold.
On Sports Radio WEEI.
Hi, back here on OMF. No Christian today. Taking the day off. I don't know. It's Friday. What do you expect?
He's got
the days coming to him, right?
Yeah. He's got to use them.
Yeah, he's got the days coming to him.
You got weeks off. You take weeks. You know, whatever it takes.
He had extra days, though, this past year, if I remember correctly, didn't he?
He did?
Yeah, he had some extra days.
Oh, he had an extra week.
Yeah, he did have an extra week.
He had an extra time.
So, I'm trying to get people riled up about this game on Sunday. Maybe I'm not doing a good job. Did people just take it for granted that they're going to go to Pittsburgh and win? Is that it?
I think so. What do you expect? Honestly, what do you
expect? Well, there's a
what
history.
Do you expect? It's like, this is what we deal with right now. This is sort of this generation. I understand it. No, for example, like, you know, the Red Sox.
Uncle Lou wants to talk to the kids right now.
When the Red Sox go to the World Series, did you ever expect them to lose it?
No, years ago I did. What I mean? Expected them to lose everything
they
years ago.
They either sweep the team, like they did the first couple times.
Yep.
So they win it in, what, five?
Five.
God forbid it goes six.
Yeah, and that was an extra inning game that game.
There's never a doubt that they're going to win a World Series.
So this is what it is.
All people just, they it's all they know.
In 1957.
Maybe. Sorry, but I'm just saying, it's all you know, and that's why I get it. You go to Pittsburgh, and you win. Of course, history matters in Pittsburgh, but I don't think we got the same calls last week going to that Miami game.
Yeah, well, we didn't get those calls because we sat here all week long saying, isn't anybody concerned about this game in Miami? There is a bad history. Bad stuff happens.
No, history only matters when you're successful.
Is that it?
If you're not successful down in Miami, well, history's got nothing to do with it. This team is better. Remember, this team needs it more. They got Pittsburgh the next week. They need to win this game. They're going to win. This is a better team. Yada, yada, yada.
So you don't
want to believe history against Miami, but when it comes to Pittsburgh, it's a positive.
All right. I got a guy.
It's good things.
I got a guy who doesn't believe in the history of the Patriots.
What do you
down
got?
In Pittsburgh. And since Christian's not here, why don't we slip him in? Max Kellerman.
Oh, boy.
There are three reasons that the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to beat the Patriots. Number one, the Steelers need this game. The Patriots don't. The fact that they play in the AFC East, it's a joke. It's a joke. And so the Patriots have a free pass to the playoffs every year, essentially. Pittsburgh is not afforded that luxury. Once again, they find themselves in dire straits. They must win the game. That's one. Two, the Steelers are at home. Patriots don't travel well this year, in case anyone hasn't noticed. They've been a bad road team, a much better home team. Three, Mike Tomlin putting linebackers on wide receivers. According to Warren Sharp, that is a fatal flaw of his against the Patriots that they always exploit. The reason I'm bringing it up is when guys like me are bringing it up on shows like this, there's such a spotlight on it. Unless Mike Tomlin wants to double down on what apparently is a foolish strategy, I believe he will correct that this week.
What's he talking about, that third one? The first one, I would agree with him. Bigger game for Pittsburgh than it is for New England. Number two, bad road team, New England. They're 3-4 in the road. We get that. You're right. Number three, linebackers and wide receivers. What's gone on here is since they lost Ryan Shazier to that awful, awful injury, they have not been able to defend tight ends, right? That's been the flaw. Is there been a ongoing thing of linebackers on wide receivers?
I don't know that one. I don't know. They put a linebacker on Julian Edelman over the years? Did I miss that one?
I
mean, every time we talk about what they do, it's zone blitz.
Yes.
So the zone defense, Gronk's gone off. He finds his space. Brady, you sit out there with the zone. He knows what's coming at him. He knows what the soft spots are in the zone, so you can blitz me all you want. But you're letting my guys run free. I'm going to burn you. Linebackers on wide. I don't remember seeing linebackers on Julian Edelman or Brandon Cooks over the last few years.
I have no idea what he's talking about.
No clue. But the thing is with the whole, they need it more. Well, damn. I mean, there's a lot of teams. Like, for example, like Dallas is going to Indy. Who needs it more? I mean, down the stretch, a lot of teams need it. But I mean, so Pittsburgh went to Oakland last week. Who needed it more? Pittsburgh or Oakland?
The Steelers need this game. The Patriots don't.
I think the problem might be that the Steelers just not a real good football
team. Sometimes it just comes down to you're just not good.
Or four, five, and one in the AFC.
You're dealing with injuries or you're not that good. That just could be the bottom line because I'm pretty sure them, you know, they had a game and a half lead over Baltimore going into Oakland.
Down to
I'm
a half.
I'm pretty sure that they needed that game more than the Raiders did, if I'm not mistaken. And to be honest with you, Oakland needed to lose more than they needed to win so they could maybe get a higher pick. So that whole theory, man, you got 2 or 3 weeks to go. Look up and down the schedule this week. You know, you got Minnesota versus Miami. All right. Well, Minnesota needs it. All right, well, so does it Miami.
What's the M&M line on that one?
Yeah, I mean, what, the Patriots don't need this game? Kansas City just lost. They're one game, you know, away from being a number one seed throughout.
But I get his point. For Pittsburgh, this could be it. Because if Pittsburgh loses this game, they're going to New Orleans next week. You figure they lose that game, and now suddenly they're out of this thing. They're out of this thing. Matter of fact, you ready for this? There is a scenario here where the Cleveland Browns could get back into it. And Pittsburgh fall out of sight.
All right,
and
so
Cleveland
let me ask you
win the division?
Yeah, Cleveland wins the next three games. They could finish in second place.
All right,
yeah.
Play this out for me.
It could be the wild card team.
Let's just say Pittsburgh beats New England. Baltimore wins. Pittsburgh goes down to New Orleans next week. You think Max Kellerman is going to sit there and say, pick Pittsburgh over New Orleans?
No, he's just doing it
because
for this week.
Pittsburgh needs to beat New Orleans, needs the game more than New Orleans does?
Yeah. And I'll tell you what.
I hate that theory.
And the easy schedule the Patriots have is the laziest. Max, do some research.
Let me give you a max level of analysis.
Please do a little work on this one. It's the dumbest argument in the world. The Patriots to this point, have the best strength of victory in the National Football League. That means they're beating the good teams, Max. That means they're beating the tougher teams. 534. You know what the Pittsburgh Steelers' strength of victory is? 401. And, Max, you may want to hold on to that strength of victory because it may be a tiebreaker that we end up using to determine which seeds.
That's actually a big one.
Dumbest fans in sports.
All right, yeah. We're dumb up here. We're idiots.
Well, that's actually a big one because I think we were talking about that. And, you know, we all know what would happen if the Patriots and the Chiefs were head-to-head.
Yep.
You know, the Patriots, they played each other. But I guess if it was San Diego, yeah, strength of victory would come into play. They didn't play against each other. If they both sit there at 12-4, that means Chargers would have to lose one more. And their conference record would be the same. They don't have common opponents, which is number three. They don't have enough of them. You got to have at least four. So the next one is strength of victory, where the Patriots' strength of victory is 534.
Correct.
It's the best out of, as you pointed
best
out.
Best in the league.
I mean, the Chargers are 417 with that win last night.
Yes. And so Max will know the Pittsburgh Steelers are the worst at 401. The worst. Okay, the lowest. With Baltimore. Tied with Baltimore at 401. The Chargers were the lowest. They were in the threes, but obviously beating a Kansas City team that's won 11 games, that moves you up the ladder.
And the Patriots have had a nice little benefit of that as well.
Yes.
I mean, saying you beat Houston, they start off 0-3, and they rattle off all these wins. So now that victory is strength of victory, strength of schedule, looks good.
You could argue you played them at the
back
right
then,
time.
Yeah. Yep. Maybe you could say the same thing about Chicago. Right now,
they were pretty good, though, at the time.
They were okay.
Yeah.
But you didn't know what they were. You know what I mean? You didn't know what they were. Let me tell you right now, going in, like, say, week 14, week 15, if the Patriots had to go into Chicago, what would we be saying about that game?
Be a big game.
Compared to what we said about it before?
Yeah.
That's a little different type of game. So you've got some victories there where teams sort of, especially in the case of Houston, took off after you beat them. They weren't the same team week one.
Yeah, but I just laughed at the national attention on this one is this whole, you know, again, it's the Dan Shaughnessy tomato can division. I'm not debating that, you know, most years you have it a lot easier than some of these other divisions. But you're also winning the division every single year. And therefore, you're playing a first-place schedule. So you're playing the top couple teams in that other division that you're matched up with, one in the AFC, one in the NFC, where the teams below you, like the Chargers were, are playing the bottom teams.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay? So there's a big difference in your schedule.
I would say the biggest difference when we talk about a tomato can, and I think I saw this, I have to go back and try to find the story, was the amount, like, since the Patriots have gone on this run winning the division, how many wild card teams have come out of the AFC East? And it hadn't been many. In other words, there aren't many playoff teams coming out of the East other than the Patriots.
I bet you there's more than you think.
I don't know. Compared to other divisions?
I think there's more than you think. We can look it up. Look it up, guys. I think there are more than
Buffalo,
you think.
Buffalo last year.
Buffalo last year.
Yeah, you got to think.
1 year we had two of them in that division. But look it up.
The Jets, I know they've done it.
Yeah. It's been sporadic. You're
but I'm
right.
just saying Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Cincy.
Yeah, you'll end up with a good year.
Houston, Tennessee has been there. Denver's always there. Kansas City's been there before. San Diego always comes on late. I mean, there's been other teams that have perennials kind of like, you know, in the playoffs.
But it's not
except for the AFC.
It's not a 12-4 team, 11-5 team. It's a 9-7 team. Yeah. It's an 8-8 team. That's what it is that's coming out of it. But it has happened before. But this so we had to bring Max Kellerman into the conversation. We needed somebody that was going to at least, you know, give us the other side of it, because I don't think New England is worried about this game at all.
Well, especially after you hear what he has to say. But it's nice to know that he's not going to put linebackers on Brandon Cooks. So a linebacker's not going to cover Josh Gordon, like they did last year with Cooks, or like they did last year with Amendola.
Where does that come from anyway? He said it's like an ongoing thing that they're trying to fix it there.
I haven't read that one. I gotta look that up.
Well, the king of Pittsburgh, I heard Ken Laird say that that's a big issue that they've been dealing with, and Ken knows Pittsburgh.
Linebackers
that have struggled in coverage on wide receivers.
It makes no sense to me. That is like a communication issues or problems, or on a slant somebody's picking somebody up. There's no way that you're purposely taking a linebacker, unless the linebacker has cornerback speed and athleticism.
Are we talking about linebackers dropping back into zones and being the first to tackle a wide receiver?
Well, that's a different
story. Is that what we're considering?
That happens all the time.
I'm just saying, is that what we're considering, linebackers covering wide receivers?
Well, we had a lot of it last week. Did we not have a lot of it last week where Kiko Alonso got locked up with Edelman, right?
Yeah.
Numerous times. That's not necessarily by design. That is the way that New England is
running. Maybe they're saying that it has been by design. Which would be a big flaw. I would agree with that.
It'd be pretty stupid, I would say.
Stupid.
Wouldn't it be dumb?
Yeah.
That would be just outright idiotic. But I do believe, and I know some people think that this Pittsburgh defense has gotten better during the course of the year. I'm not convinced. I think parts of their defense, personnel-wise, there's some good personnel still over there. But they're a much different team with the loss, and you saw it last year with Ryan Shazier. Much different team. That's a guy that could do it all. He could cover. All right.
Real quick, the Red Sox?
Yeah.
They lost another player.
Uh-oh.
They lost another player.
Uh-oh.
And I don't know if you can be upset about this
one
or not.
Uh-oh. You want to wait? You want to tease it?
Nah, it's only Ian Kinsler. I can't tease Ian Kinsler. Kinsler signed a 2-year deal with the Padres. I can't tease Ian Kinsler.
I'll tell you what.
I can't do it.
I'll say this. The Red Sox might have said all these nice things about Joe Kelly, but when it came to dishing out the money to Joe Kelly, they didn't seem to think that he was worth an awful lot. We'll get to some of that as well. And your phone calls on the Patriots coming up next.
The Drive Home is brought to you by Town Fair Tire. Town Fair Tire sells every name brand at the guaranteed lowest price. And Town Fair offers more free services than any other tire dealer. For the best prices on tires, nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Now back to Ordway, Merloni, and Fourier on Sports Radio WEEI.
We felt like it was fair for all parties involved to have our kicker earn his way into the stadium this weekend. And we didn't care who that was. And we had, you know, understood that Boz was a candidate in that mix. We brought in two credible guys. We kicked those credible guys and Boz, and we were comfortable with what we saw from Boz. It created a little adversity. He had an opportunity to deliver to an acceptable level. His teammates had an opportunity to watch him deliver to an acceptable level, and we're extremely comfortable with him as our kicker going in. Like I said during the week, I wasn't interested in an easy decision or shooting a hostage or anything of that nature or assigning blame.
We're shooting hostages again.
Don't bring up hostages again.
What are we talking about? First of all,
why does he use that analogy?
I have no idea.
You think the easy route, I could shoot a hostage?
I have no idea.
You'd be a bad negotiator. Sure, that would be the easy thing to do if you shoot the hostage.
I just don't understand what the hell Mike Tomlin is doing. And maybe the players just absolutely love him because he, you know, let him do whatever he wants. Do we need to know or the fans in Pittsburgh, did they need to know all of that information? Here's where I will back up Belichick, because you know I never do lose. So this time I will actually come and support a Belichick. I think if you give out far too much information, like Mike Tomlin does, and you're sitting there and you're going over exactly who's injured, who's not going to play, what we're doing, what guy we brought in, we didn't think this guy was better. If you give out that much information, then you're putting yourself in a worse position.
Yeah, I can confirm that.
Thank you, Bill. You're in a competitive sport. You're giving the opposition constant information. You know that's what it's all about. Bettors want information. The opposition wants information on your team. And you're volunteering it the way he does? That is ludicrous. Now, Belichick does it to the extreme where he doesn't tell us anything, but I think he takes an advantage out of it because nobody can figure out whether a guy's hurt or not, whether a guy's going to play. We had a situation with Gronk where everybody thought one thing and then there was something totally different 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, we're so accustomed to not getting anything from any of these guys, from any of them. Right, we were joking about it before earlier in the week. I love listening to Tomlin's press conferences. Not that I would want to be my coach, but they are funny, you know. And he'll sit there and talk about Ben's ribs. You know, Ben's got some sore ribs, and by the way, it's on his left side of his ribs. So if you want to hit him on the left side, hit him on the left side, not the right, because that's going to hurt him more than anything. Connor, I know he's dealing with an ankle, but he's also got a little hand issue right now. So ball security is an issue coming into this one again. I mean, just
stupid.
Okay, thanks. Let me know.
Yeah.
I mean, even I don't even know if you got did you have Rivers. Like, just even last night, this is how bad it is around here. That when I heard Rivers describing, like, the final play, I was like, wow, he's giving us a lot of information that I normally wouldn't get here either.
I was gone. I was going to the sideline, going to overtime. And Coach Lynn said, let's go win it right now. Let's go for two. Let's go win it right now. And when he said that, there was so much conviction from him. It was, yeah, let's go win it right now. I mean, it was immediately turn around, let's go win it. I mean, and if we didn't win it, we didn't win it. But I think his conviction... It wasn't like, should we? It wasn't. It was, no, let's go win the game.
Yeah, well, it was another part. He's talking about plays. The plays he made. We were going to run the football, but then I saw this, and then we went over here, and we threw it here, and we saw this coverage, and it's like, Jesus. You know, you just...
Well, there's one
thing
after.
We're so accustomed to not getting information that we're used to saying, okay, obviously they're going to ask him about Ben and how his ribs are doing, and Tomlin's obviously his response is going to say, we'll see when the injury report comes out on Wednesday. And if he can't play, he won't play. You know, we'll see. If he can play, he'll play. Like, that's... Instead, you get all this stuff.
Yeah, but I'm a football coach. I'm not a doctor.
But I think if you're looking at what benefits the franchise the most, it's the closed-mouth approach. It's saying absolutely nothing. Yeah. That, to me, works better.
It might annoy me.
It annoys the hell out of us. And the fans are always, you know, why doesn't Belichick say more? You know,
this is another one with no sources, right?
Yeah, we got to coach better. We got to play better. It's the same stuff over. And it is what it is. It's the same stuff.
Is Gronk moving better? But, I don't know what you mean.
But he's played.
He's not injury report. I don't know what you mean.
But if I'm a player and the coach isn't giving any of that information away and I'm playing on Sunday and the guy who's playing opposite me on the line of scrimmage, let's say, has no idea that I've got a real problem on my left knee or whatever, I feel a lot better going into that game, right? So Belichick only gives what the league requires him to give and no more. Mike Tomlin gives that like every other coach Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And then he tells you specifically where the sweet spot is. I'm going to attack my player. Here it is right over 120 here.
120 pounds of pressure will apply a fracture to the bone.
Unbelievable. And the shooting of the hostages. Give that up, Mike.
Yeah.
What are we doing here?
You can do it.
No clue. I got to tell you, I think he just sucks as a coach. Really sucks as a coach. I am amazed that he has lasted that long. And by the way, as a caller pointed out yesterday, really has never taken the heat that he deserves for actually tripping a player who was on the opposition who was running up that sideline on a kickoff.
Come on. That was not, you know that if Bill did that, nobody would have brought it.
Are you kidding me?
Either.
Are you kidding
come
me?
On,
they would want, the national media would want a one-year suspension.
Resignation.
For Belichick. Resignation.
What, you think about suspension? A guy on the competition committee would do something that might flirt with the rules a little bit?
No, he said he did it by accident. Everybody just believed him.
You know what he said? He said he's accustomed to looking at the Jumbotron, and he just happened to be looking at it in that position. What, 4-5 feet out on the field? Are you kidding me?
Your mind wanders.
How did he get away with that? And there were people who were defending him. Oh, yeah, you know, that's Mike. Mike's telling you the truth. He had no idea that the player was running. He had no idea. He's the head coach. His job is to watch every single play.
He didn't know the play was going on.
That's what he claimed.
He's just looking up on the board. Guy's running. He's running.
Thought it was a replay.
So the guy's running down the sidelines right at me. But so to get a better look, I'm going to look up at the scoreboard.
Hey, that guy looks like me.
I mean, I know the TVs are nice and all. Those screens are big.
Nice.
But the human's coming at you. I think you got a better view of that one,
don't you? You were listening to the Patriots radio broadcast for the majority of the first half.
That was the other one. He had Zoe in his ear on that one. I remember that one. That was another close. It's amazing. And you want to know something? They lose on Sunday against the Patriots and lose next week against the Saints in New Orleans and don't make the playoffs. He will be back next season. He will not. His job is not in jeopardy.
You think it should be?
Not in jeopardy. Yes, I think it should have been 3 years ago. You look at the talent that has come through that organization. That is a great organization when it comes into drafting, developing players. They've had a great track record of that. By the way, here's the other one. We heard from one Pittsburgh Steeler fan who was quite negative this week. Usually when you get the Pittsburgh Steeler week, and by the way, this is another quirk of the schedule, is that you get the Pittsburgh Steelers a lot if you're New England because they usually finish in first, and so that's part of how the scheduling works. But we have not heard from any of the Steeler fans who usually call us in the week of the game just to bust our balls, just to sit there and say, you know, we're going to kick your ass.
No, they're all agreed. I agree with you guys with Tomlin. He's underachieved. He should be on the hot seat. But when I say should he be or not, I mean it's because I could see them missing the playoffs this year and then next year being the year. You know, where, okay, if you miss it again, now we got problems here in Pittsburgh. But right now, I don't see it.
All right,
you're too loyal.
You ready for this? We'll take wild card teams since 2001. That was the realignment, right? That's where we had the realignment, starting in 2002 season. The AFC East has done well.
I don't believe this.
They have done well. So the AFC North has had 12 teams, wild card teams. And so you've had the Baltimores, you've had Pittsburgh's, and you've had Cincinnati a couple times. Of course, they don't win when they get to the playoffs, but they've got there a couple times. The AFC East and the AFC South are second in the AFC with 8 wild card appearances.
Doesn't seem right.
The AFC West has had 7. So you tell me, Dan Shaughnessy, and the wild card teams are not New England. They win the division. They're about to win it for the 10th consecutive time in what, 15 out of 16 or 17 out of 18. So it's wild card teams are your Buffaloes, your Jets, and your Dolphins.
Tomato cans.
The tomato can division.
Tomato cans.
And yet, AFC East, there have been 8 wild card teams, the same amount that you've gotten out of the AFC South, and one more than you've got out of the AFC West that everybody glorifies right now because you got the Kansas City and you got the Chargers, right? And you got Denver. Good teams over there.
Yeah, I don't
Not
believe
15.
It.
What do you don't believe?
Well, I just don't believe it.
It's a fact.
It doesn't feel right.
It's because I did the numbers.
Yeah, don't feel
doesn't
right.
Doesn't believe me.
Double check.
You questioning Ryan on the numbers?
Yeah, it
doesn't
feel right.
I question me every day.
Quality control. This is our Ernie Adams
I need
of the
an
show
Ernie
right
Adams.
Now.
This doesn't feel right. Doesn't feel right.
So you think he's lying?
Yeah, well, doesn't
you want him
right.
to double check?
Yeah, double check.
There was
double
one
check.
Year where they actually had 3. I believe it
no,
was.
No, they didn't have 3 was, wild card. You can only have 2.
No. New England and then 2 AFC teams.
I said that. Did I not say that going when we asked you to do this? I said one year they had 2 wild card teams come out of the division.
I mean, you talk so much, Glenn. I can't catch everything that's coming
good
out
point.
Of your mouth.
Yeah. Good point.
I just don't believe the stats. I question our research department. That's all.
All right. We're going to double check it. But if that's the case and these facts are correct, do you stand corrected that and Dan Shaughnessy
no.
should as well?
Okay. No, I don't. All right. No, because there's never a threat. They always suck.
Because New England is better, head and shoulders better than all of those.
Well, it doesn't
other teams.
Matter. I know.
Well, wait a minute. Pittsburgh could be head and shoulders above all the teams in the division.
They're not,
but,
though.
But they're not. And so Kansas City or Oakland, when they earlier in that decade, or the Chargers, any one of them could be better than everybody else in the division.
But when we
but
sit
not.
There and say, okay, who's going to win the divisions going in? You know, there's always a debate: 2 or 3 teams in every other division other than the East. And I realize that's probably because the Patriots are always so good. But it also has a lot to do with the fact that those other teams just always suck. They're not very good before you even play game one. When you look at the talent on the field, you look at the quarterbacks, we look at the coaches, they're not very good.
But they're represented in the wild card game as much as these
You've
other divisions
Buffalo
are.
Buffalo last year, you had Miami the year before, and I question that either one of those teams were a threat or any good.
Yeah, well, none of them have been threats to win the Super Bowl. I will give you that.
Yes.
But I think the biggest problem with the tomato can division that people have is that New England is head and shoulders better than any other team in the division and have been now for almost two decades. No other team can claim that. Teams have had ups, they've had downs. You know, this team is won 10-plus games in how many years? It is unbelievable. But that's part of it. But I think that the division has been represented, and I think Ryan's research that you're questioning shows it, that the AFC East has been representative the way that the South has and better than the AFC West, slightly under the AFC North in the playoffs.
Hmm. I still don't believe it.
Yeah, you thought it would be like three.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And you thought
it would be three or four, and everybody would be 12, 10, 9, 12. Yes.
I think what's kind of weird about this list is the amount of years that you go without getting another team from the AFC. So you'll have like the Jets, and then you'll have the Dolphins, and then you go five seasons without any representation outside of the AFC East. And then you have another 2 years where, okay, now maybe there's going to be a little competition, and then again, you just go into this drought. Yeah, so maybe that's why it's so magnified.
It's awful. They suck. They suck every year, and you know it. They'll suck next year, too.
But they will suck next year. But when you look at, eventually, this thing is going to turn.
Oh, when Brady leaves and Bill leaves,
it's going to turn.
Yeah, it'll turn, and then football will die in this town.
It will not die.
Unless Jimmy Garoppolo.
See, this is the baseball. This is baseball. Lou talking right now.
It will.
This is baseball. So what happened with Joe Kelly? The Red Sox didn't want to pay him.
Apparently not.
2 years, not 3 years like the Dodgers.
So 3 years, 25. So we got a little over 80 a year, right?
Yes. And the Red Sox apparently wanted to give him two, but less average annual salary than what the Dodgers
did. So they don't want him.
They don't want him.
2 years, seven each? 2 years, eight? 2 years, 16? 2 years, 15 million? No, yeah, he's gone. He's going back home.
So
they don't want him.
So how do I? So there's one thing about him wanting to go to the Dodgers. He's an L.A. guy. I get that. I didn't realize he grew up like 2 miles away from Dodger Stadium. So there's one thing about that, but there's another looking at these numbers right now, if they're accurate, that the Red Sox really didn't want him. So what are they doing here with bullpen? They're not going to bring Kimbrel back. So these guys are starting to go off the board. The Mets bring Familia back. Okay, we're starting to
three
see
at 30.
Some, okay, we're starting to see some movement here. The Red Sox are looking at it, and they're not willing to go $10 million a year for one of these guys, right?
Right.
Seems that way.
Right.
So it sounds like they're going to bottom feed. They're going to wait because there are a lot of bodies in that pool of guys that you would consider closers. I say that loosely because they've had a little bit of experience there, or you could project them as a closer, but they're an end-of-the-game bullpen guy.
Yeah.
And they're going to let those guys go off the board at high salaries, and then they're going to take their chances. Sometimes it does work. You get a guy who had a bad year or so-so year. His market value going into free agency was not great, and then he goes and he has a terrific year because that's what bullpen guys do. Have a great year, then they suck the next year. That's what they're going to do, and they're going to try to get a couple of those guys cheap, on the cheap, try it out.
I always thought they were going to replace Kimbrel and Kelly with like two of these guys. Bring in two of them for like $10 million each, $9, $10 million each, as opposed to $16, $17 for Kimbrel, you know what I mean? And now I'm starting to believe that the guys like Robertson you're hearing about, Ottavino you're hearing about, Britton's another guy that's out there. Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure they're still interested in those guys, but I could see those guys going off the board and them just sitting just like Kelly just did and say, yeah, we're going to wait. We're going to wait. And maybe what they're waiting for, because they believe in their medical department so much, guys like Andrew Miller, guys like Kelvin Herrera, guys that had injuries last year, where the market maybe isn't an Ottavino who was a stud last year and Kelly who finished strong in the postseason, or Robertson who's consistent. You know, Britton did come back, maybe not himself, but still. So maybe it's one of these guys, you know, maybe the market isn't great for an Andrew Miller. Maybe it isn't great for Herrera. Both these guys, at the end of the year, finished in the DL. Maybe those are the guys you try to bring in for that lower money, thinking medical staff, get strengthening up shoulders, whatever it might be, and we get more value out of $4, $5, $6 million than we will out of $10 million in someone else.
It's a gamble. There's no question. But it does work at times because you never know with these guys. Like Ottavino had a terrific year last year in Colorado. Look at the year before. Is anybody betting that Ottavino, it's not like you're looking at him and saying he's been consistent. He's given you three good years.
Nasty.
This guy's right. But most of these guys have an up year and a down year.
Yeah.
Up year and a down year.
Yeah, and it's also philosophy. I could see them talking to Ottavino saying, okay, this is what we see. You need to eliminate two pitches. You got five coming out of the bullpen. Elevate the fastball, breaking ball down the zone. That's what we're going to go with. Keep your changeup. Get rid of all the other crap. He's got a couple things. He's a Northeastern kid, and he's a Paisan. So I like him.
He went to a local college, okay, in the same ethnic background as Lou Maloney. So all of the stats, everything else that he throws, all irrelevant.
It's very in-depth checklist.
It's out the window.
Well, you know me. I'm in-depth when I talk baseball. I break things down.
And I know
went to Northeastern,
he's Italian-American.
Northeastern, and he's a Paisan.
Oh,
so bring him in. Please. But I wouldn't be shocked at all if they do. If they look at Herrera, you know, you remember last year they had him. Right? Washington pulled him back right before the deadline. That was a trade that Dombrowski was talking about.
Yeah.
Well, a week later, I think he did something to his ankle. I forget which was first, but it was either the shoulder or the ankle. And then with the other one kind of kept him out and pretty much ended the season in September. So there's some health concerns. Andrew Miller was never right. We were talking about him last year.
No.
He's out there throwing 93, 92. That ain't him, right?
No.
So maybe they look at those two guys, say, this is the cheaper options, you know, and we can take a gamble on these guys. Show them what our plan is for them medically to get them 100%, get them back on that market in a year or two healthy.
Well, if Pedro dug up the Bambino and put him back out there, Adam Ottavino would strike him out, right?
Every time. So he hit a $140 with six home runs.
Where did this come from?
I had an argument with a coach in AAA about Babe Ruth's effectiveness in today's game, and this was like 10 years ago. And I said, look, Babe Ruth with that swing, swinging that bat, I got him hitting $140 with 8 homers. And he's like, are you nuts? Babe Ruth would hit .370 with 60 homers. And I'm like, I would strike Babe Ruth out every time. Like, I'm not trying to disrespect him. You know, rest in peace, you know. Shout out to Babe Ruth. But it was a different game. I mean, the guy ate hot dogs and drank beer and did whatever he did. And it was just a different game.
So this went viral and everybody was talking about, but you could say that about any athlete. I mean, Babe Ruth, when you look at him, was a big old fat slob. But if he were to grow up in this generation,
exactly,
okay, he would be pumped and jacked like Trout.
So along comes Root in his annual battle with his waistline.
You would have to.
I understand why you would say something like that, but I truly believe that everything is relative. Yeah, I remember talking to guys now in today's game, hitting coaches and things, saying everybody throws 97, 98. You know, I'm amazed that these guys can just light up 97, 98 like it's nothing now.
Right.
And they said it's all relative. Like back when you were playing, it was 93, 94. You know, so that was what you were normally, what you're accustomed to seeing. You react, your swing reacts to it. Now it's just all they see is 97. So their swing reacts.
Training
to it.
Is different, right?
Yeah.
The body and
but
how
that's
they...
like saying, like, I think Ted Williams, sorry, Ted Williams would come in this league and he would lead the league in hitting.
Yeah.
Because he would adapt to everything else. Right. Everything would be relative. He would work out. He would do this.
Body
he would do
type
that.
Would be different.
But the hand-eye, the swing, forget about it.
Yeah. Almost 40 and kind of fat.
Yeah. Would not be slender. He would have a different body. I mean, you could say that about anybody. Go back to the NBA. I love it. You know, when people talk about the old days of the NBA, people say, oh, the NBA today, they would kick ass over Russell and Cousy and those guys. Well, first of all, if Russell and Cousy were growing up in this generation, Bill Russell probably would have been 2 or 3 inches taller. Cousy might have been a couple inches taller. They would grow up with the conditioning and the how kids are growing up right now, because you learn from Julius Erving, and then you learn from Michael Jordan, and before that, Magic and Larry. You learn from generation to generation. It would be totally different. You can't take an athlete from today and suddenly try to compare him in any way to Babe Ruth.
You don't think a guy like Charles Barkley would do well in the NBA in 2018 with all the running there is now?
I think he'd be fine. He would have to, you know.
He grew up now.
He'd have to change a little bit. They'd all have to adapt. Now, some of these guys, if they can't, you know, push the away from the table, you know, you're going to have
that
problem.
Speaking of adapting.
Yes.
Did you see that X special last night?
I did.
It was very good.
It was excellent.
I thought it was outstanding.
It was excellent.
I don't know if anybody saw it or not, but
that's the problem. It's the MLB Network, right?
It was
fantastic.
You don't
know if people watch it. It was unbelievable. We will get to it coming up next.
Keep up with the show on Twitter at OMF on WEEI. Before, during, and after the show at OMF on WEEI. Let's get you back to more of Ordway, Merlone, and Fourier right now on Sports Radio WEEI.
It'd be dangerous to be as blatantly honest as Eck is and pull no punches.
Here's my buddy.
There was an incident on a team charter a year ago where David Price had some words for Dennis Eckersley.
The dust-up is attributed to a moment where X sees the rehab assignment of Eduardo Rodriguez.
Eduardo Rodriguez made his first rehab start tonight.
Yuck.
I don't really know what to say about it.
all I can say is my side of it is like, it was humiliating. And I don't really quite get it. Because I didn't need that. I didn't need that for a character builder. I've had enough character builders, you know?
MLB Network did a one-hour documentary last night on Dennis Eckersley, and Lou's right. I don't know how many people watched it. It was on 8 to 9, and the football game started at 8:20 or whatever. So if you get an opportunity, because you know how it works on those cable networks, they'll play it a zillion times till you're sick and tired of it. But that wasn't even the best part. And maybe for me, we knew too much about this David Price stuff, and they kept that kind of short and sweet. Now, I brought it up yesterday, and I think Christian was stunned when I said, oh, he had an incident where, you know, his wife left him for his best friend as he was being traded. Because you got to be kidding me. I said, no. I said, I don't know if they're going to talk about it. Not only did they talk about it, but it was unbelievable how open Eck was about dealing with this.
Dennis Eckersley had been traded from the Indians to the Red Sox before the 1978 season.
It was tough. Those people are like your family. You love these guys, but it's the best thing that ever happened to me. I don't know what would have happened if they didn't trade me.
Because he was about to learn something shocking from two of the most important people in his life.
Rick Manning was my best friend. He played center field. And my wife and I, we were like, you know, the three amigos, man. We were tight. And my wife fell in love with him, and she told me she wasn't in love with me anymore. And it was devastating. I had a little girl, Mandy, that was 2 years old. It floored me. He was the stepfather of my daughter. She had no idea. She thought, I have two dads, you know? And so that was what was important, is her, you know, knowing that, oh, my dads get along. And I think that's important.
God, imagine that.
Imagine if one of you or Nomar were married.
Oh, Jesus.
And then me a hand left, Nomar. Then,
that's right. For you, and for you. You imagine that. Imagine,
no,
you,
here's the thing.
And
so
they still remain friends?
Yeah, I spent 2 years in Cleveland. And Rick Manning is kind of known as Archie Manning. It's just Arch.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, it's just Arch, whatever. And he's like base running coordinator, was in camp and working for 2 years. He's still on the broadcast with the Indians. And you know, even when the Indians came in, did a game and saw him there, you know, X calling the game. But these guys are still, you know, they're like best friends. Like he said, the three of them used to hang out all the time. Meanwhile, his wife's falling in love with this dude. And like you said, imagine if he didn't get traded.
Oh.
Now, I mean, I don't know what led to the trade. If they were just like, all right, we got to, you know, we're moving on with either Eck or we're moving on, you know, Manning's got to get traded. One of these guys got to get traded. They can't go back into camp. The dude just, he's now with his wife.
It would have been a disaster.
And my wife and I, we were like, you know, the three amigos.
That is an unbelievable story.
What was he? Bruce Hurst?
Yeah, too? Bruce Hurst was all over the thing.
No,
he was all over the
thing. He was saying how, like, he's like, man, we're facing, you know, Manning the next year. And he's like, just drill him. Get
drill
it over
him,
with.
Right,
and
right.
Manning kept getting hits off back. He's like, just drill him. Right. What are you doing? Just hit the guy once. Will you just hit the guy once? The least you could do.
Well, it was great. He revealed this whole thing. By the way, he is a great storyteller, isn't he? I mean, you talk about he was a terrific pitcher.
Oh, he's on the broadcast.
Yeah, Hall of Famer. And he's great, obviously, on the air. But in a situation like this, and kudos to the filmmaker who did it, because what they did is they had him up on stage. So they had him at the beginning of the thing walk in and said, this is a guy who always wanted to be on center stage, and they've got the lights. And I thought it was just like a cute little open. They were opening it up or whatever. And apparently they did it up at the Cabot Theater in Beverly. Nope. That's where he did the interview. So the whole interview was done with him on center stage. The whole thing, it really was well done.
Yeah,
that was a clever move.
I mean, he's a cocky son of a bitch.
Oh, no
question. Some of the stories are great.
Oh, the no-hitter.
Well, the no-hitter, but even like when he's on the plane, and the stewardess asked him to sign a ball, and he signed it to Ace, like his rookie year. You know, Gaylord Perry's there, and I guess
the
manager,
the kid did.
Frank Robertson's like, look at this, look what the kid did. And he's like, but hey, I was feeling it. You know, Eck, you know, I was feeling it. What do you want me to do? I was young.
So I was around, and I remember him in his first go-round here in this town. And he was pretty unbelievable. Those stories about Daisy Buchanan's and
the
wild
days.
Man. Oh, yeah, all true. And all true. He was just a wild man.
How about that no-hitter? So he throws his first year, second year in the league. He's throwing a no-hitter.
Yes.
So he's got like two outs in the ninth inning, and the photographer's now like kind of like, you know, near the coach's box. And what? How do you explain it? The hitter?
It seemed like there were no limits on the kid from Fremont's potential. especially 2 years later in a start against the Angels.
It was Memorial Day. We got one run in the first, and I had to make that thing hold up. And I was dealing that night. I really was.
Catching him, I mean, I've never seen anybody with the control that he had against the Angels in that game. It was just painted.
The score was tight, 1-0. The tension hung on each pitch. Baseball can't get much better than this.
The last inning, I got two outs, and Gil Flores was up. And the photographers, the guy kept running out by the coach's box and was like setting up his camera. Well, he was bothering Gil Flores, and I'm chomping at the bit. This is the last out. And he's taking his time. I went off. I said, hey, they're not here to take your picture. You're the last out. Get the in there. And then I punched him out.
But, you know, the thing is with me, it's like, you know, this full that. Disclosure. I know everything went down. People are like, oh, you got X back. Yeah, damn right I do. You know, because you, when you're a kid around here, you know, some of these guys are too young. But, you know, 78 was kind of like a blur, but you remember it, right? And then 86 got everybody into it. You know, I'm a 15-year-old kid. I'm watching the Red Sox. But then now you're into baseball. And then X is out there in Oakland with those teams. And he's fist pumping. He's pointing at guys. And, like, I was always like, you know, that kind of – I always liked those kind of guys, right? You're just the mouthy guys.
Yeah.
So you start appreciating. So my rookie year in the big leagues, Dennis Eckersley's on my team. You know what I mean? So now I'm sitting in the back of planes having discussion, playing cards with him. We're talking about 78. Talking, you know. And you guys all know him now in the broadcast. But, yeah, I mean, that's a guy that you know, I have so much respect for because what he went through in his life. You know, he talked about the alcoholism that he found out in Chicago in day games and how easy it was to go out every night because he's a starter, right, 4 out of 5 nights. Hell, the game's over at 5. What do you want to do? What do you think I want to do? Let's go booze, you know, and that's back in the day. That's what they did.
I think the line was, you know, they tell you how to work hard. They tell you how to pitch hard. Then they tell you how to drink hard.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, so then just turning his life around and going to rehab and everything else and having the career he had out in Oakland. So it was, yeah. So I know the kid. I mean, not the kid. I know the guy, and I respect him. Everything he's gone through, he's a teammate of mine. So something
you're
like that happens.
Out. Get the in there.
Something like that he's, happens in a plane. I'm certainly not going to back the other guy.
He's not a kid.
No, not a kid.
Not a kid. I can tell you that he is up there in age. But I thought the hour was terrific. I really did.
That was great.
And I started watching it until 8:20, and I wanted to watch the football game, and obviously paused it and came back when the football game was over and watched the rest of it. But I was wondering if they get how much they would get in to some of those things, the problems, the issues, the demons he was dealing with. And I never thought they would get into the Manning thing the way they did. He's joked about it before. I've seen a couple of one-liners out there where he's
kind of... Well, on the broadcast, he talked about it this year. They had that sound
that's
on
right.
the broadcast.
Right, that's what it was. Yeah.
Yeah. They brought it up. But.
Who was the who were the two baseball players? Was it back in the 70s that swapped families? Do you remember that?
And, Jesus, no.
And look it up, guys. Yankees?
Swap families?
Swap families. And actually, Matt Damon... with Affleck, I believe, put together a screenplay based on their history. It was Peterson.
Chris Peterson and Mike Kekich.
Mike Kekich, correct. And those guys were have a screenplay written, and they were going to make a movie of this thing. And check that out, Drew. See if you can find
so
out
they fell
what
in
happened
love
to
with
Damon's
the other
movie.
One's wives?
Yes. And they switched families. So the family's just
Jesus.
Switch.
I don't even know. Is Art still with his ex-wife? I have no clue. If I knew back then, on back of a plane, I might have asked him a couple of times.
Now, Fourier probably keeps up with this stuff. He likes.
But imagine being the guy. Stuff. A lot of people don't know that. Be the guy that with the word walk-off came from.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right.
I mean, that's what it is. I throw the last pitch. The hitter doesn't walk off. He runs around the bases. I walk off the mound. That's where it all came from.
Yeah.
You know, and you hear him talking about, he was out there at the World Series throwing the first pitch to Kirk Gibson, the dude, you know, most people don't come back from that. And he was in that locker room for, 2 hours or something like that? You know, just sitting there 2 hours talking about that, not leaving. Media, you got something to ask? I'll sit here and ask. I'll answer every question. Yeah, I don't run from it. I don't got somewhere to go. I don't ask to go home. You know, I don't do any of that stuff. Whatever. It's on me. Let's go. You want to talk? We can talk about it. Hey, I hung a slider. It's the only pitch you could hit. It was a stupid pitch. And 2 hours, he was in that locker room talking.
Can I go home?
I mean, it's ridiculous.
He seemed to be the, it's interesting, knowing him the first time around, covering that team, he seemed to be much different than he is now. And yet, some of that stuff, and Hirsch brought it up, some of that stuff you talk, he sounds like the same guy. He was just a younger and a little bit wilder at the time. But they talked about he was the most honest guy, straightforward. He was, and any dealings I've had with him, you know, since in this broadcasting career of his, and he actually did some big shows back for us the first year he was out when he wanted to get into broadcasting.
What up?
I've always found him to be extremely honest, but I thought he was different when he was a player, and yet I really didn't know him as a player. And the guys that were talking about him, the way they talk about him as a player, he seems to be the same guy, Lou.
Yeah.
You know, really honest, straightforward, this is it.
Well, he's
you know,
different point in his career when I played with him, but, you know, I'll defend him to the end, so. They sure as hell can go the other way in an airplane.
So you should watch it. If you haven't seen it, watch it. You'll find it somewhere on MLB Network. It was really good. All right, 617-779-7937. We'll get back to talking some football. Big football game coming up Sunday in Pittsburgh.